I shall tell you a great secret, my friend. Do not wait for the last judgment. It takes place every day. Albert Camus. Random House Audio presents The Good Guy by Dean Koontz. Read for you by Richard Ferrone. Part 1. The Right Place at the Wrong Time. Chapter 1. Sometimes a mayfly skates across a pond, leaving a brief wake as thin as spider silk, and by staying low avoids those birds and bats that feed in flight. At 6'3", weighing 210 pounds, with big hands and bigger feet, Timothy Carrier couldn't maintain a profile as low as that of a skating mayfly, but he tried. Shod in heavy work boots, with a John Wayne walk that came naturally to him and that he couldn't change, he nevertheless entered the Lamplighter Tavern and proceeded to the farther end of the room without drawing attention to himself. None of the three men near the door, at the short length of the L-shaped bar, glanced at him. Neither did the couples in two of the booths. When he sat on the end stool, in shadows beyond the last of the downlights that polished the molasses-colored mahogany bar, he sighed with contentment. From the perspective of the front door, he was the smallest man in the room. If the forward end of the Lamplighter was the driver's deck of the locomotive, this was the caboose. Those who chose to sit here on a slow Monday evening would most likely be quiet company. Liam Rooney, who was the owner and, tonight, the only barkeep, drew a draft beer from the tap and put it in front of Tim. "Some night you'll walk in here with a date," Rooney said, "and the shock will kill me. Why would I bring a date to this dump? What else do you know but this dump? I've also got a favorite donut shop." "Yeah. After the two of you scarfed down a dozen glazed, you could take her to a big expensive restaurant in Newport Beach, sit on the curb, and watch the valets park all the fancy cars." Tim sipped his beer, and Rooney wiped the bar, though it was clean, and Tim said, "You got lucky finding Michelle. They don't make them like her anymore."
"Michelle's 30, same age as us.
If they don't make them like her anymore, where'd she come from?" "It's a mystery. To be a winner, you gotta be in the game," Rooney said. "I'm in the game. Shooting hoops alone isn't a game. Don't worry about me. I've got women beating on my door." "Yeah," Rooney said, "but they come in pairs and they want to tell you about Jesus." "Nothing wrong with that. They care about my soul." "Anybody ever tell you you're a sarcastic son of a bitch?"
"You did, like 1,000 times. I never get tired of hearing it."
"This guy was in here earlier, he's 40, never been married, and now they cut off his testicles."
"Who cut off his testicles?"
"Some doctors." "You get me the names of those doctors," Tim said. "I don't want to go to one by accident."
"The guy had cancer. Point is, now he can never have kids."
"What's so great about having kids, the way the world is?" Rooney looked like a black belt wannabe who, though never having taken a karate lesson, had tried to break a lot of concrete blocks with his face. His eyes, however, were blue windows full of warm light, and his heart was good.
"That's what it's all about," Rooney said. "A wife, kids, a place you can hold fast to while the rest of the world spins apart."
"Methuselah lived to be 900, and he was begetting kids right to the end."
"Begetting?"
"That's what they did in those days. They begot."
"So you're going to, what, wait to start a family till you're 600?
"You and Michelle don't have kids."
"We're working on it."
Rooney bent over, folded his arms on the bar, and put himself face to face with Tim.
"What did you do today, doorman?"
Tim frowned. "Don't call me that."
"So what did you do today?"
"The usual.
built some wall. What'll you do tomorrow?
Build some more wall.
Who for?
For whoever pays me.
I work this place 70 hours a week, sometimes longer, but not for the customers.
Your customers are aware of that, Tim assured him.
Who's the sarcastic son of a bitch now?
You still have the crown, but I'm a contender.
I work for Michelle and for the kids we're gonna have. You need somebody to work for besides who pays you. Somebody special to build something with, to share a future with.
Liam, you sure do have beautiful eyes.
Me and Michelle, we worry about you, bro. Tim puckered his lips.
Rooney said,
alone doesn't work for anybody.
Tim made kissing noises. Leaning closer until their faces were mere inches apart, Rooney said,
you wanna kiss me?
Well, you seem to care about me so much.
I'll park my ass in the bar. You can kiss that.
No thanks. I don't want to have to cut off my lips.
You know what your problem is, doorman?
There you go again.
Autophobia.
Wrong. I'm not afraid of cars.
You're afraid of yourself.
No, that isn't right either. You're afraid of your potential. You'd make a great high school guidance counselor, Tim said. I thought this place served free pretzels. Where are my pretzels?
Some drunk threw up on them. I've almost finished wiping them off.
Okay, but I don't want them if they're soggy. Rooney fetched a bowl of pretzels from the back bar and put them beside Tim's beer.
Michelle has this cousin, Shadra. She's sweet.
What kind of name is Shadra? Isn't anyone named Mary anymore?
I'm gonna set you up with Shadra for a date.
No point to it. Tomorrow I'm having my testicles cut off.
Put them in a jar, bring them on the date. It'll be a great icebreaker, said Rooney, and returned to the other end of the bar where the three lively customers were busy paying the college tuition for the as-yet-unborn Rooney children.
For a few minutes, Tim worked at convincing himself that beer and pretzels were all he needed. Conviction was assisted by picturing Shadra as a bovine person with one eyebrow and foot-long braided nose hairs. As usual, the tavern soothed him. He didn't even need the beer to take the sharp edges off his day. The room itself did the job, though he didn't fully understand the reason for its calming effect. The air smelled of stale beer and fresh beer, of spilled brine from the big sausage jar, of bar wax and shuffleboard powder. From the small kitchen came the aroma of hamburgers frying on a griddle and onion rings crisping in hot oil. The warm bath of agreeable scents, the illuminated Budweiser clock and the soft shadows in which he sat, the murmurs of the couples in the booths behind him and the immortal voice of Patsy Cline on the jukebox were so familiar that by comparison his own home would seem to be foreign territory. Maybe the tavern comforted him because it represented, if not permanence, at least continuance. In a world rapidly and ceaselessly transforming, the lamplighter resisted the slightest change. Tim expected no surprises here, and wanted none. New experiences were overrated. Being run down by a bus would be a new experience. He preferred the familiar, the routine. He would never be at risk of falling off a mountain, because he would never climb one. Some said he lacked a sense of adventure. Tim saw no point in suggesting to them that intrepid expeditions through exotic lands and across strange seas were the quests of crawling children compared to the adventures waiting in the 8 inches between the left ear and the right. If he made that observation, they would think him a fool. He was just a mason, after all, a bricklayer. He was expected not to think too much. These days, most people avoided thinking, especially about the future. They preferred the comfort of blind convictions to clear-eyed thought. Others accused him of being old-fashioned, guilty as charged. The past was rich with known beauty and fully rewarded a look backward. He was a hopeful man, but not presumptuous enough to assume that beauty lay, as well, in the unknown future. An interesting guy came into the tavern. He was tall, although not as tall as Tim, solid but not formidable.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?